gentlemen, may I have your attention, please?
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Girl, loved the mess. I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus, I loved my uniform. So did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age. Those things I thought were true. Someday I'd break the big taboo. Letting go, God.
Letting go. Hello. Welcome to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5, and we have Riv with us today. Hi, Riv.
Hello.
There you go.
Here we are.
Yeah. Okay. Your microphone's stronger than mine, apparently. We're live on WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM, right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. This is a radio, an atheist talk show, obviously radio. We talk about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we also talk about religion. I've lost my mind. There it is. Religious thought. Religious faith, God's holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville or in the Bible Belt, well, you're just wrong. There are several atheist and rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and we'll tell you how you can connect with them later on in the show. Also, did you know that there's also an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville? Did you know that, Riv?
Oh, no. Isn't that... I'll try to do Wombat some justice here. Isn't that the one where they went into a machine and they had to fly around and use the force and see the code and find out how everything worked but didn't work but looked like it did?
No. That's a different one.
Oh, okay. All right.
But it is a good show, and it's been broadcasting. This Atheist Call-In TV show has been broadcasting in Knoxville for 7 years now. At the end of August, matter of fact, it's 7 years. And we'll be talking about how you can communicate with them, watch the show, and get yourself involved in it, if you'd like, later on. We'll have to give you the details. And in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs out there, and there are more all the time. And you'll hear some of them right here in this program and generally on the station as they are in rotation. Riv, you're bringing the topic tonight, I believe. What do you got for us?
Well, it was something I was listening to on a recent topic I saw, that a video that was basically re-uploaded from a re-upload. And it was, I think it was a video from Matt Dillahunty from last year or so. And he was talking about, because he had this argument with a guy named Jay Lucas, I think. And the topic was, you know, evidence for God, right? Can of worms there. And so eventually they started talking about slavery. And that's, you know, Matt's one of his specialties is, yeah. You know, and it's one of the things you can't get around.
Yeah, well, they tell you in the Bible how you not only can have slaves, but how you can mark them, how you can sell them, how you can sell your own daughter into slavery. They don't say a single word against slavery throughout the entire book. A lot of people will say, well, that's just the times. You know, that's what they did back then. But the thing about it is, God is supposed to be eternal. And if that's true and we're supposed to go with the Bible, does that mean we're supposed to be doing that now and we're just not doing it? You know, how do you explain that? And how do you explain the morality of keeping slaves?
Well, right. I mean, it's kind of like a Kindle, right? A Kindle or an app on your phone would update whenever there's, you know, something. There's a new program, there's a new algorithm, something to improve the program. One might think that it'd be that way with the Bible any of the religious texts. Right. It would just update to be, well, these are the new standards.
Yeah. Why couldn't an all per, all-powerful God make a medium that would automatically give us the information we need to make a good society starting at day one? He was teaching us how to treat each other. In the New Testament, anyway, and the Old Testament is more about obey or die. In the New Testament, they profess that Jesus would give us some rules of morality, but even those rules, some of them are pretty bad to live by, like give no thought to tomorrow. You know, we would all end up being homeless and living on the street within a month. There's just a lot of things in there that begs the question of how could it be correct if it's an all-powerful, omniscient God giving us information when the proof is in the pudding. You would not do well living by those rules.
All right. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, even the turn the other cheek would make you a victim all your life. Never be able to stand up to yourself. Someone took advantage of you. You just turn the other cheek, and they would do it again.
Well, right. And on that note, I mean, there's slavery issue, which goes into a big topic, which kind of merges with what you were suggesting earlier, which is the dangers of religion and with the trappings. But even before that, something you mentioned I think is really important to highlight, and that would be the. I just lost the thought.
About slavery,
taken advantage of. That's what it was.
Yeah.
So, it's so easy to romanticize something. You know, I often romanticize about being born in the Japanese feudal era. I often think, oh, that'd be great. Mm-hmm. To be a Ronin. You know, or to be a smithy, or to be even better, to be a
What century was that in? I'm not familiar with it.
Well, it kind of varies, but generally it goes from the middle of the millennia to.
It's about 1500.
Well, roughly a bit before then, maybe as far as because the country was divided.
Okay.
You different parts.
Before the Renaissance, before the Enlightenment, so we had. Rampant plagues.
Right, well, you have, and of course this is over in Japan, right? So you have
still
divided country, you have
feudalism.
You have a lot of fiefdoms, you have a lot of kingdoms, you have, the shogun has more power than the emperor. Essentially, well, that's how the structure works, but you eventually get to the Meiji era. But, so it'd be a bit more peaceable times, but even then you have Commodore Perry coming from the Americas and saying, you know, open the door, or open the door for you, and yada yada,
and then introducing all those plagues,
right,
and diseases.
I mean, so at the time, I tend to romanticize about how great it would have been to me to be a court serf, or be someone who is in the royal guard, or someone who is again a smithy.
Uh-huh.
It's easy to romanticize about, but the reality of it, and it's twofold. Is that one, I wouldn't have even been aware of anything else. I wouldn't be aware of
the outside world.
Technology. At that time, I could then romanticize. Wouldn't it have been nice to have been born in 200 CE in the Roman era? I mean, so it's based on posterity information. So it's always going to be a past thing rather than a future thing, probably based on information you have available. But even then, yeah, there's sicknesses. We didn't have the medicine. We didn't have the hygiene awareness. We didn't have so much tools, implements. So it's easy to romanticize about that. But in terms of the bit about romanticizing, right, when you mentioned, what did you mention before that?
That's the slavery and turning the other cheek.
Right, turning the cheek, that's it, turning the other cheek. So it's easy to romanticize the notion of it's okay. Just be a complete pacifist and always let them do anyone, whatever they want to do to you, just do it.
You're a better person than they are.
Right. It's easy to romanticize that, but if you really do take that to its logical conclusion,
you would be the eternal victim.
You would, unless you're just a dedicated masochistic type person, uh-huh. It's not going to be a very pleasant life, I think, and furthermore, it has psychological implications to when you view yourself in such a way that you have no worth. I mean, right. It's very damaging in the long run. Mm-hmm.
And to me, there's an underlying problem with that in that who's telling you? I mean, of course, the Bible is telling you to turn the other cheek, but who is day-to-day telling you to do that? Your preacher, the person who's in authority in the church, and which basically gives them the right to hurt you or harm by using, you know, I use the word harm to mean emotional, financial, or physical harm. He could take advantage of you left and right, and then he keep telling you to, you know, just be a better person, turn the other cheek, and then he turns around and takes advantage of you again. So it's to their advantage, I would think, the church's advantage, to preach that gospel and come down on it as often as they do.
And having the, especially in Catholicism, how you have to report to the Father. You know, not only do you replace the name with Father, so there's a psychological impact there, but also the constant confessing is a way to basically maintain that. It's basically the same thing it is we were both, you know, in the military. Mm-hmm. It just constantly reinforces that level of authority. You know,
right.
It always reinforces, this is where you are, this is who you listen to, this is your authority chain.
Right.
So the weekly confessions, that's a part of that, it's baked into it. You know, and we were talking to someone outside there, Angel, talking about him, and, you know, it seeps into the things we don't realize. You know, they just, because the contemporaries at the time will start doing these things, and they'll start following those protocols, and even the contemporaries at the time will start having issues with it. So this doesn't check out. This doesn't check out at all. The scholars of the time will say, no, this is problematic. This is, you know, ethically, morally, and even historicity. So the question comes, well, how come people are still following it? How come all these religions are still happening thousands of years? Well, it's just proliferation.
Well, it's brainwashing from the earliest childhood. They push these ideas into your brain at a time when you can't question them. Mm-hmm. Or at least when you try to question them, they can squash your questions simply by saying, because I said so, or because the Bible said so, or what do you know? You're only 6 years old. You know, this is the way it is.
Yeah, you haven't developed critical thinking faculties. You can't separate fiction from your imagination on what's going on.
Right. A lot of us would still be believing in Santa Claus if it weren't for somebody disavowing it later on in their life. But what you said a little earlier about having them call you Father, I've got a website called digitalfreethought.blog, and I've got an article on there called Religion Hijacks Everything. And they tend to hijack just about everything that's good in the world. Goodness, holidays, anything that, you know, they have these pagan holidays, they're no longer pagan after the Christians come in and take over your country.
Mm-hmm.
They hijack spirituality and call it their own, the capacity for self-healing and education. But one of the things I wanted to come down on was that they hijack the family. Jesus himself said, if you cannot... here's what it says. It says, if any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and child and brethren and sister and yea his own life, he cannot be my disciple. That's Luke 14:25-26. So he's telling you right there that if you're not following him, if your family tells you not to follow him, or if they don't want you to follow him, then you should leave your family and follow him like any good cult leader would say. And not only that, but if you think about the church, what do you got? You got the Father, you got your sisters, your brothers. So they try to supplant your own family with their organization. And it's just part of religion. They you know, it's the way it works its way into your sanity, your mind. It's very much like some modern-day cult leader would say, turn your back on your family if they don't follow you into our family. And then they'll try to turn you against them.
Well, and, you know, as far as even just base reasoning, you know, as to make moral judgments, right? As a preface, right, to coin what I mean when I say what I mean, in the moral sense, without an ultimate moral arbiter of insert religion, people can claim easily that, well, your whole worldview, this is a big one I see, your whole worldview is inconsistent, therefore invalid. They can just write you off because that your worldview isn't consistent.
Or it isn't consistent with what they believe.
Right, and you can just simply refute it and say, no, I just take one step further. You're presupposing this existence that sets an ultimate purpose, an ultimate morality, and I'm just saying I don't see sufficient evidence for it. I don't see sufficient reason for it. And philosophically, the more I go into it, it seems more and more an argument against it, but that's just personally.
Right.
But along those lines is dealing with people's judgments, right? Here recently, in the White House, who leads all the prayers in the morning? They do multiple studies per
chaplain,
week.
Chaplain, White House chaplain.
Oh no, it's someone. He's I forget his name. He's started up a whole bunch of groups of that throughout the country. And now he has one in the White House, and I forget the name. But the statement was made. The one pastor, with close ties with Trump and the family and everyone else. And that was that essentially, that since God chose Trump, it's okay to go ahead and use these nuclear missiles and, you know, with North Korea situation. And I'm wonder why that's. Even if someone had a motion against it or a notion for it, all that's aside, if they put their priority into, well,
minimizing harm instead of
my religious leader is saying this, therefore.
Yeah. If you're listening to the show and you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us and talk to us at 865-333-5937. That's 333-5937. Love to hear from you. But it's just crazy for me. I mean, that they would think that way, because if they started tossing nukes around, there wouldn't be anybody left to worship or call God's name or whatever. It would be at the end of it. Of course, their religion, the one thing I always like to say as an atheist is, at least atheism believes we have a future. You know, we believe that the world can go on and people can live and have good lives as far into the future as we can possibly see. But it's built right into the Christian religion, and others, I'm sure, that the world's supposed to end, and soon. And the sooner the better, because we all get to go to heaven. And it's not death, it's just a change of address.
So. Yeah. The soul is eternal, and it's just where it's going to be for eternity.
Right, and if you believe that stuff, there's no atrocity that's beyond you. And you can verify that by looking back down history. The religious wars,
Crusades. And
Crusades. Yeah. What was the one thing that nobody expects?
Spanish. No one is quoted by
Spanish
Princess Bride.
Monty Python. Nobody expects
Monty Python, that's
Spanish
what it was,
Inquisition.
So Sally Yates, that's mentioned sometimes, right? Andrea Yates. Andrea Yates.
She was manic. She was crazy. But her structure for her mania came from Christianity. If you don't know, take a minute and write down the name Andrea Yates. She, the dogma of the church, and the rightfully so in this particular church, said that children, if they die before the age of
reason, like seven,
then they automatically
go
to heaven. Yeah. You know, I mean, how many religions do you know that say that? You know, children are not responsible for good and evil until they reach a certain age, and they certainly don't go to hell. So, you know, the religion is going to tell you that they go to heaven. Well, Andrea Yates was a believer, and she was a pretty darn strong believer, about as strong as the Muslims who flew planes into 9/11, into the buildings in 9/11. So she took five children, her five children, all of them, and drowned them one afternoon to get them into heaven. And of course, because the religion teaches forgiveness, she knows that she could always ask for forgiveness and join her children in heaven. this is the kind of thing, this is the logical end to some of the teachings of the religion. And people just don't see it. They say, well, she was crazy. And of course she was crazy. She was crazy to kill her own children. But at the same time, she had sussed it out in the framework of her religion, and it made sense.
Right, and just something to maybe think about, an image, is if one is judged by what they believe, what they know, well, I should say what they're aware of, right? Because belief, so much can't be chosen. You believe what you're convinced of with what the evidence
right.
you're aware of.
Uh-huh.
You mean, you know, if you just, you know, fake it till you make it, okay, but it's not really believing, right? You can't control what you believe. It's what you're informed of, but it informs your worldview, what you believe or don't believe, right? It's it's just the framing of it. But even that being said, when you have a situation where it's just thought that what you do in life does not matter, your actions do not matter, so long as you even claim to believe something, which again runs into a problem of logic, but that aside,
yeah.
you state to claim something. So you'd have people like Gandhi, you'd have people like Carl Sagan, you'd have people like past humanitarians of recorded history going back to, you know, thousands of, you know, years ago. You'd have individuals who you could say are very humanist in their behavior. They would all be burning
in hell right now.
But then you'd have people like
Jeffrey Dahmer.
You'd have people like depending on the religion, you'd have people like who flew into the World Trade Center, right? You'd have very religious individuals, say back in, well, more relevant, you know, not to Germany in the news here recently.
You know, you could say Hitler if he asked. He was Catholic, so if he asked for forgiveness just before his lieutenant shot him, then he would be in heaven too. But all the Jews that he killed would be in hell, according to Christianity.
Right. And it just really, you know, maybe maybe beg the question is, how is that right? How is it that someone can come to the conclusion in their mind that you can do all these things and nothing is not permissible so long as you keep your mind on X, Y, and Z scriptures, which contradict themselves back
yeah.
and forth, and apologists will say, no, they don't, yada, yada, yada. That's an endless little argument back and forth. I should say it's not an endless argument. I should say it's a generous tolerance. I wouldn't say it's so much an argument.
Yeah.
It just depends on the perspective of it.
Yeah.
But if someone comes to the rationale that this sky god, this sky god is looking over me, and unless I do things that are taught by this sky god, or
mm-hmm.
then I'll be punished.
Yeah, forever.
But, and, you know, take it back to Epicurus, right? And take it back to Euthyphro, the problems they had with, the Euthyphro, not Euthyphro himself. You run into those problems of how behavior is ultimately secondary to what the scripture says. And it's hard to reconcile with that. I haven't been able to. I've run through situations in my head, and you still run into the logical problem of if there's something that is being judged that is based on what is written, then that is subject to what is written versus how people we define, empathy, pain, neurons,
right.
this
and harm.
This hurts, therefore, you know, we define how we live. Society, it's adaptive. Culture is adaptive. We're an amalgamation of everyone before us to our present day. How our societies are built, how our infrastructures are built, how our grids are
right.
are built.
It's progressive.
And just to say, I don't come a rambling thought, but if you just, it has to come out of this book, then that's unfortunately, I think, telling of the lack of time that someone's put into thinking about it.
Einstein once said that if you pin your morals to an authority figure or an authority thing like a book, and then he says that's dangerous because if ever the authority got undermined, then your morality would be undermined. So you need to keep in mind the effects of the actions that you take at the time that you take them. Who's going to be hurt? What is it going to be the extent of the harm? And why are you doing it in the first place? Keep your reasons in mind. And, you know, it's all situational. Now, Christians will say, yeah, it's relative. Well, yes, it is. It's relative to the situation. Mm-hmm. And one thing that the Bible teaches you is that if you sin, and I've heard many preachers say that all sin's equal. It doesn't matter if you kill somebody or fornicate or steal or tell a lie.
Have a thought without crime.
Yeah. It's equal. Now, and the Bible says that you're going to suffer eternal, unending punishment for the simplest of sin, which is a magnitude, mm-hmm. you know, of immorality, mm-hmm. because you should not suffer that. The punishment should fit the crime. Most people would say that, but then they turn to the Bible and say, "Well, no, any and all sin are going to be punished with eternal torture," which is just asinine.
Right.
One thing that usually gets me was when I talk to somebody who's a believer and I tell them I'm an atheist, and I talk to them for a little bit, and they are unconvinced, of course, because they would be, especially in the initial conversation. They'll always just say, "Oh, well, you just got to have faith, and you're an atheist because you just want to sin." And the thing about it is that they theoretically can sin all they want to, and then go home at night, get in their prayer closet, and ask their invisible friend for forgiveness. Clean slate, start tomorrow. You know, what's the difference?
Right. In the word sin itself, the word sin, I think, is interesting because a good friend of mine, I talk with her so often about the issue, mm-hmm. is that sin, per his definition, was defined as a transgression of the law, the secular transgression of the law, which I took issue with. I said, no, I don't think that's quite the way
secular
it is.
Secular transgression of the law?
Not phrased not exactly secular, but I mean transgression of the law. And I asked further, I said, is that biblical or is that just purely governmental? No, he said, and I paraphrase, in a secular sense, just the law itself. The sin was the secular transition of the law.
And
I was saying, well, I'm pretty sure sin, the only definition that it has is within a religion context itself.
Yeah.
You're going against the will
of God.
Of God.
Yeah, it's a sin against God. You're not following his word. You're transgressing against God. And that's most people don't get that. If there's no God, there's no sin. I mean, it does not exist. It's mm-hmm. something made up by the church in order to sell you the cure and keep you in the fold and keep power over you and keep you tithing.
Yeah, and you can call, let's say you were to call, you just want a sin. Let's replace that with you just want a strawberry. And you just want a strawberry. It'd be the same thing. No, we have strawberries, but let's say we didn't have strawberries. It'd be the same thing. You just want a strawberry. What's a strawberry? Oh, I don't know, but it says in this book, therefore, and extrapolate that argument, and it would say, well, if the concept was not strawberry, and it was blueberry, and we did have blueberries, but let's say we didn't have strawberries.
You're not making much sense to me. I'm not following.
It's just the concept remains. It's just the word that is interchangeable.
Right. Okay. Well, let's take a break. It's at the bottom of the hour. We need to station identify and play a song. This is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM, here in Knoxville, Tennessee. I'm Doubter 5, and we have River with us today.
Ooh.
And you can be thinking about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Strawberry. Maybe it's a little computer. I've seen those little strawberry computers. Okay. Anyway, here for the song at the break is going to be the Symphony of Science called a song called The Big Beginning. And if you like this song, the Symphony of Science has an awful lot of other ones that are very edifying and very good. And you can find them on YouTube, Symphony of Science. This is The Big Beginning. Here we go.
I'd like to start, if I may, with Professor Hawking. How did the universe start? With a Big Bang?
We observe that distant galaxies are moving away from us. They must have been closer together in the past. It was the beginning of the universe and of time itself. Anything that happened before the Big Bang could not affect what happened after.
The poetry of the expanding universe, the poetry of the complexity of life, we're not normally equipped to understand, and science gives it to us. Science is opening your eyes to the wonderfulness of what's there. Science is opening your eyes to the poetry of the expanding universe.
To come to you, Carl Sagan, could you help me by putting into layman's terms what was involved with this Big Bang?
The early cosmos was everywhere, we taught it. But as time passed, the radiation expanded and cooled. Then pockets of gas began to grow, steadily brightening. We call them the galaxy. It was the beginning of the universe and of time itself. Anything that happened before the Big Bang could not affect what happened after.
The poetry of the expanding universe, the poetry of the complexity of life, we're not normally equipped to understand, and science gives it to us.
In the Big Bang, we had equal amounts of matter and antimatter. And as soon as these met each other, they annihilated together. And this battle played out whilst the universe expanded. In its first moment of existence, they annihilated together. And this battle played out whilst the universe expanded. In its first moment of existence, they annihilated together.
It's not all that hard to detect the Big Bang. All you need to do is change the channel until you come between two stations. About 1% of the snow and noise comes from the Big Bang itself. We're all eavesdropping on the birth pangs of the cosmos.
It was the beginning of the universe and of time itself.
And this battle played out. Science is opening your eyes to the poetry of the expanding universe.
And this battle played out whilst the universe expanded. In its first minute of existence,
it was the beginning of the universe and of time itself.
Listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
And we're back. This is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, and we're live at WOZO Radio 103.9 LP FM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Let's talk about the Free Thought Atheist groups that are here in Knoxville. Well, first, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded in 2002. November marks our 15th year. ASK now has over 700 members, and you can find them online at knoxvilleatheist.org. Or you can go directly to themeetup.com and look for Knoxville Atheists. It's just that simple. Also, you can join us in person at our weekly meetup, which happens every Tuesday at West Hills Flats and Taps on Kingston Pike near Westtown Mall. We get together for happy hour, food, drink, and conversation. Everybody is welcome, and as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Matt Dillahunty. Another free-thinking group here in Knoxville is the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for more than 20 years. RET has bi-weekly presentations and discussions held at the Pellissippi State campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sundays in the Goins Administration Building Cafeteria Annex. And if that's too much to remember, just go to their website at rationalist.org and click on Upcoming Events. If you do decide to go to the campus on the first and third Sunday, around church time, about 10:30, just follow the signs once you get there, and they will take you to the gathering. There's also the Sunday Assembly, which started in England, another group, that just started a couple of years ago, and it's now spread around the world. It's a no-God church setting for those who've had enough of religion but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. They only meet once a month, though, on the fourth Sunday at the International Building downtown near the fairgrounds. Then there's the Secular Student Alliance, which has programs to give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school and college student who would like to be involved in the free thought movement, or who would just like to find other free thinkers to hang with. Everybody needs like-minded friends, and atheists are no different. Earlier in the show, we said we'd talk about the Atheist Call-In TV show. Well, it's named Free Thought Forum, and you can see it every Tuesday between 5 and 6 on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. If you don't have cable, you can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. You can also find archive of some of their shows on YouTube where a fan has been posting them. Just search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. And if you're interested in getting involved in the TV or this radio show, just come to an ASK meetup or an RET meeting and talk to us about it. You could be our next co-host or guest. And, Riv, you had something you wanted to talk about when we got back in, is that correct?
I do. I just kind of wanted to hit back on the topic we started out with, the tried and true topic of slavery. And there's a couple things I want to mention. But before what was mentioned on the break, I also want to make a small point about here about, which kind of leads into the second point, talking about the associations of the groups and everything, is that when you're indoctrinated, right, especially when you're young, you haven't thought about does this pass the test of what is logical, you know, before you develop any sense of skepticism, you know, substantive skepticism, when you can just, you know, discern, right?
Right, know the rules of logic and the fallacies and things you need to avoid.
Right, and it's everything's basically based on authority, and that is great for the religions to, and it's just sometimes systematically. I don't think it's necessarily always in the Far East. It's just continuing tradition, what their parents taught them, what their parents taught them, and on down the generation.
Uh-huh.
And so there's that video that I mentioned, right, with Matt Dillahunty versus Jay Luke. I shouldn't say versus. That has some connotations to it. They were trying to have...
It was Matt Dillahunty and who?
And Jay Lucas.
Lucas, okay. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, it was good. It's a good hour-long debate. There's this 20 or so minute section that was highlighting that of slavery. And Matt kept on getting him into a corner. And he had to keep on doing these hermeneutic... contortions, that's what it is, to basically explain away things that are just atrocious.
Yeah.
Because, you know, as we've come along, we've progressed. Mm-hmm. I mean, with the advent of some aspects of technology, we've replaced different forms of labor. You know, that's just the way, you know, it's been attributed to the modern... and even pre-modern distribution of electricity, that was probably one of the most singularly changing things in history, in that we could change essentially what we used for our labor. It went from cruel conditions to better conditions.
Yeah, not only that, but it gave us light and it extended day so that we could continue to work.
And it changed all... Right, and so... So I wrote down a thing here from Acts, not the whole thing, but what he was talking about, and talking about being back into a corner, you know, a believer back into a corner. They'll come up to a point that they're either, I must defend what this book says, because to do otherwise, I can't even bear to imagine it. So, not every case, but when you get into apologetics.
I've heard that before. I can't imagine a life without God or without the Bible, and therefore they are stuck. Because they will not imagine it. They don't want to imagine it. It would change their life so much that they're afraid of the change, and they don't want to go there.
Right. And so instead, there'll be misrepresentation, there'll be desperate interpretations of what something says, and slavery was mentioned. He kept on hitting them on slavery, and you wouldn't... Matt was patient. He kept on trying to hit it, and he just kept on trying to duck it. And so eventually he ties in this bit from Acts 17, verses 24 for 32. He reads it through. I think it was the New English Version. It wasn't King James. Yeah. It was the English Standard something. And so he gets through to the end, and he twists a bit in there that was not in the Bible. Mm-hmm. And when he says, basically, Jesus will come and change everything. He'll take away. It'll be suffering, no pain. It'll be wonderful. Good times for everyone. And then there'll be no more slavery. That is nowhere mentioned. Uh-huh. Is nowhere mentioned.
Yeah.
But because he was so desperate to cling to that interpretation, because he himself was against it, but he couldn't reconcile the two. Mm-hmm. So he has to throw it in there almost reactively. He has to maintain his psyche demands.
He grabbed on it.
And Matt Dillon Hunter wouldn't let it go. And, you know, and it, he nailed home the point in the videos. He, you know, takes the debates, reviews them, and conveys what his thoughts afterwards with the people. And basically, he just nailed on that point. And for anyone who's listening, that's the main thing, is that from birth or from youth, if you're told God is always right, if the world seems crazy, take comfort because God is always right. If it's drilled inside your head in one way or another, then you'll grow up and you might find yourself in a situation where you can't reconcile science with what is written in a book. You can't reconcile what is demonstrable and observable with what is written. So therefore, you'll turn to apologetics because they seem to be the champions of the faith. And they'll set you straight on the course.
Right.
And that's where you can go really wrong.
I don't know how many times I'll bring up something that's obviously or patently bad in the Bible that Jesus says or that, you know, God says or did. And the apologists will give me links to like 12 articles and 3 videos and an audio to be able to explain it away. When the reader of the Bible is supposed to be able to get the message from the Bible without having to do all this gymnastics. If you've got to, read the Bible plus a million articles and watch 13 million videos to
study
a
language or two,
you know, then, and they all give different interpretations of the Bible, then how are we ever supposed to get the message from the book that God was supposed to have left us with?
Right. Yeah, it's kind of
it's an ever shifting target.
Right.
Anyway, I always like to say that the Bible is a Rorschach test. Mm. It not only, a lot of people say it's a multiple choice, and it is. You can find anything that you want to in there to support the view that you have prejudicially brought up, I guess, in your own psyche. But to me, it tells more about the person. What they get from the Bible tells me more about the person's beliefs and actions and personality and even racism and prejudice as to what they pick out of the Bible. I mean, you can go into one church and the preacher has found nothing but love in the Bible. You go into another church and the hate is dripping from the walls. Mm-hmm. And it's more of a reflection of the person itself. It's a Rorschach test to determine where you're starting from, basically, and what you want to pick from the Bible to support your own views.
Yeah, and on that point, the Rorschach is interesting. I think this has been mentioned. I think Wombat has mentioned a couple of times before as well, many times. It's interesting the correlation with pick your religion, right, whatever, where the religion happened, any of the major ones or less known, whatever they are. It's interesting how their interpretation of the gods or goddesses and deity figures will interestingly align with how they personally world the view in polls and surveys and questionnaires and what do you think this passage means to you?
Uh-huh.
And it just happens to align with exactly how your worldview is. And it's across the board.
But not the person you're talking to
frequently. Right.
They say that if you go into a church and there are 50 people in the church and you quiz them, There are 50 different gods, really, that they worship because they see God differently. That's why all the religions seem to be okay with putting "In God We Trust" on the money. But if you put something like "In Yahweh We Trust,"
yeah.
or in you know in the in Allah we trust, they're going to immediately schism and faction and be at each other's throats.
Right, and you know it's kind of a political sideway point. You know, it's not surprising so much as it is just frustrating when I think about it. Is that I would think, and probably this is just my fault for projecting, but I would think that people are aware that the, our currency, our banknotes, didn't always have "In God We Trust."
No, it didn't.
But a lot of people think that, and yeah. I'm always surprised by that.
Yeah. You know? Well, it wasn't our papal money until the mid-50s, which wasn't that long ago. I mean, I was born in 1950. I was born before it was on our paper money.
Right.
But you can go back to the Civil War to some of the coins that first had it on it. But even then, it was, you know, almost 100 years after the founding of the nation. So it was, it did not in any sense go back to the founders.
Right.
Yeah. And anyway, it's against the Constitution. The Constitution said we should make no laws establishing a religion, and putting God on the money is definitely an establishment of that religion, a religious belief, or religion over non-religion. And it's just cowardly legislatures who are afraid of the backlash if they didn't support a bill like that.
Right.
Even if they didn't, they'd still have to vote for it or lose votes back home.
Right, and contemporaries at the time, you go back to, you know, our fourth president, right? You had I talk about the name so much, the presidents is Noam Chomsky talks a lot about him. James Madison, what was his name? Madison, yeah, James Madison.
See, now is when you should be calling him.
Yes. It was James Madison.
Heck, I typed in the fourth president, and it keeps coming up with Trump. I don't know what's going on here. There he is, James Madison.
Okay, that's right.
He was an anti-religious
president. And that's the point I was going to make, is that you look at the contemporaries of the time, right? He was the fourth president. He had issues.
Mm-hmm.
He had issues. He wanted to keep a secular kind of state. He wanted to uphold that, but politically, it was very difficult for him to just do what he wanted to do, because he had to make compromises. Because at the time, the church was more stronger, right? You had the Episcopalian was one of the strongest.
And the Congregationalists and the Church of England. That was very strong.
Yeah, the Orthodoxy is more useful.
And the Baptists, of course, they were getting pretty strong too. Matter of fact, it was the churches who wanted the separation of church and state at the very beginning. It wasn't the atheists or the secularists who were demanding that there be a wall between the church and state. It was the early churches in America, because they knew that if one of them got in, mm-hmm. they would soon outlaw all the other religions. So they insisted that we put a wall between the church and state. And nowadays, people just don't seem to get that. If your religion doesn't get in, and one of them does, like a Protestantism or Catholicism, then it's going to outlaw the others. You don't actually have to outright outlaw it. You just need to start, like, oppressing them a little more, taxing them a little more, passing laws against them. And before you know it, you know, you've got one religion that's taken over the United States, and the others are on the outs. So you really need to support that wall, whether you're religious or not.
Yeah, and there are issues that I believe came up with some legislatures that didn't pass but tried to here recently. Was it about a year ago in a state above us or two? About basically being able to use the Bible as a foundation for law.
Yeah.
And if that had passed, I mean, have you read the Bible? I mean, that would, you know, it didn't pass, but it just goes to show.
It'd be like living in Puritan England, you know. You'd be branded with a scarlet A if you committed adultery, be cast out of your city or stoned if you did any of a multitude of sins. And, of course, you never know which thing they're going to make a sin, a deadly sin, once given the power.
And that has to say nothing of the multiple ways people would interpret This, but it's kind of like when you have laws, right? For instance, it was recently there's been pressure against in Obama's era. Now it's being challenged with the law of the land being how we're a bit too late, but better late than never maybe. Basically, you know, equality issues, right?
Yeah.
You know, there's gender, sexuality. Mm-hmm. But now that's being challenged due to interpretation of the law that would include all these things, but not one's gender.
Right.
So it, they're challenging it because maybe out of principle, but I tend to think that some of it might be just this hardcore repressed. It goes against the grain so much of what traditional values are. So if there's a way to fight back, we'll do it. But maybe it's not.
Yeah.
But it.
And you said something a little earlier about the religious right or the far right saying that Trump ought to go ahead and, if he needs to launch those nukes,
God empowered him.
Well, what about God empowering Obama? They weren't saying that when he was in office. How come that it just happens only when they get their president in?
Yeah,
it's
or like all the things, all the plans to, you know, repeal the place 8 years later. Didn't even have a plan. There's all this
with the all three powers of the, all three government branches of the government in power.
The plan was, it never was a plan. It was just a really it was a really useful talking point to stir up base.
Right.
But when you actually have the power, oh, we never thought we'd have this ability. Now we got to scramble to do something. It's horrible.
Yeah, they could go back home and say, I voted against Obamacare 27 times this year, like it was really an accomplishment. But then when they actually get a chance to get rid of it, they don't. They falter.
Right. It is boggling in ways. But, you know, and I'm not sure this is... Maybe a bit of a positive spin out of all of this is that, you know, we have the Internet. Internet changes everything.
Yeah.
Right. And so people are becoming more aware. You know, they're, you know, the statement is that college is where you go to learn and religion goes to die, you know.
I always heard it was the Internet. Internet is where religions go to die.
Internet is where the religions go to die. That's right.
But before the Internet, it was college.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, that's where I went and where I lost my faith was in college.
Yeah, and it's just we have these. All these media outlets and these abilities to communicate seamlessly, and people are learning from each other. You have places like, you know, Skillshare and Great Courses Plus and various companies I can think of, who are just people amalgamating together and saying, "Hey, let's teach each other things." And you know, it goes along still on the optimism track. You know, we've had two great revolutions involving steam and the power and the we had the locomotive, we had the steam, we had the electricity, we had the telephone lines, information. We've had, and the next one was diesel, and we had, there's three pillars to every revolution, right? But we had all these revolutions coming along, and now we're in the great third one, you know, with the Internet of Things. We had the Internet, we have increasing infrastructure for logistics. We have solar power. They are increasing our storage capacities. Mm-hmm. Things are getting better.
Well,
even
the last one may be the end of it, though. The way that intelligence, artificial intelligence, is doubling and becoming more and more powerful. Some people say we won't survive that one.
Well, that is, you know, Elon Musk, Stephen Hawking have commented on it, both, I think, aptly.
Yeah.
Aptly as well.
That we need to be afraid of that.
That we need to not just let it be like, oh, well, let's just let our curiosity drive us. I mean, let's do the science, right? But
put in limitations, like Asimov's robot laws. Asimov?
The three laws of robotics, or whatever it was.
You cannot harm a human. You cannot, by inaction, allow a human to be harmed. And what was the third one?
And then you, I think, preserve yourself, or something like that.
Well, that sounds good. At least we could hard code those in there. Yeah.
Right. I mean, but it's we you know, there's the sci-fi and everything. But look at how sci-fi has influenced things. I mean, Star Trek with the mobile phones, the flip phones, that really had a heavy influence in how our cell phones came to be what they were.
Right.
I mean, and we have augmented and virtual reality.
Right.
We see those things popping up in fiction, and they're in reality becoming more and more like we're creating. The science fiction is becoming closer and closer to way off here to, yeah, just a couple of decades. I mean, we're getting there.
Yeah. Well, we already got cybernetic humans.
Right.
We have people who are built in artificial hearts and artificial heart monitors. I've got one of those.
Right.
And, you know, you can have hearing implants now. It's funny.
And vision, people are blind.
Yeah.
They can,
yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things, and it's going to come more and more, especially when we start manipulating genes, mm-hmm. Which CRISPR. We're just now starting to really understand. So I don't expect that to be far off.
And Stephen Hawking can type with his thoughts. I mean, that's amazing. He just thinks.
I thought he was looking at a screen and blinking.
That's what he originally
the previous version of it?
Right. Originally it was a blink code, but now it's neurologically, it's implanted, so now he thinks and he can type.
So they can plug into the old noodle now?
It's on a lobe on the side of his brain. He just looks at it and he thinks and he types. And it's
wow,
just...
that's great.
You know, we're going places.
Yeah. There was a movie out there, this reminds me of so much, it's called Brainstorm. Mm-hmm. It was Natalie Wood's last movie, and Christopher Walken, I think, was in it. But anyway, if you get a chance to watch that, it's very, very thought-provoking, because what it allows you to do is put on a headset and, like, ride a horse or something, and it records all of your thoughts, your emotions, your sights, your smells, all of your sensory input. It puts it on the tape so that you can then tape that tape and give it to somebody else and play it, and they can close their eyes and be horseback.
Oh, like rich brain imaging.
With all of the senses. And,
nice.
I mean, that's really nice, and it's an incredible movie plot or device, but it takes it all the way to the end. Like, what would happen if someone died while they were recording and then somebody else put it on and played it back? You know, it just, there's a lot of things in there. Or what if they had sex? It'd be a whole new type of porn.
Right.
It's an incredible movie, and I highly recommend it. It was, like I said, Natalie Wood's last movie.
It's called Brain.
She's very good in it.
What was it called? Brainstorm. Brainstorm. I
remember
that one.
The technology, you know, computers are old because it was like in 1980s, you know, computers. But extremely good story. They really need to remake that movie, but it was very well done. Getting down to the top of the hour, do you have any final words you want to go out on?
Along with my usual, but I would say just when it comes to having conversations with people, and whether we believe or don't believe, it's try to analyze why it is you think what you think and trace it back to when you first started thinking that, and then try to deconstruct it rather than just, well, this is what I've thought, this is what my preacher says, this is what my friend says. What do you actually think? And I think you'll be surprised, it rarely is actually the same.
Right.
So I would say, you know, as always, be well, do good, and think critically.
Very good. And while you're thinking, it would behoove you to learn the laws of logic, mm-hmm. and learn the fallacies. Take a few minutes, go online, do a Google search for logical fallacies, find out what they are, find out how your thinking may be wrong or bad thinking, and also learn the rules of logic so you'll be able to build on premises to a logical, correct conclusion. That being said, this is Doubter 5, and I'm with Riv. Say goodbye, Riv.
Hello, goodbye.
And remember, everybody's going to somebody else's hell. Don't worry about it. Time to worry about it's when they prove them. Talk to you next week at 7 o'clock.
Bye-bye.
listening to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.